It is my pleasure to present...
Good morning and welcome to the Carmichael Dave Show, starring Carmichael Dave, Jay Mars, and your phone calls on the Fire Wings hotline at 1-800-920-1140. Text in on the Jiffy Loop text line at 44-1140. Now, strap in and sit down. Here's Carmichael Dave.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning. Let's go. Well, hello.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, really, good morning to you.
Hello.
Welcome in. Good morning. Michael Dave, Jay Mars, same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. As the,
And ever was it same.
Legendary Donna Mikey. Same as it ever was. Hope you're all well. It is Thursday. You're almost through the week. Oh, what a long week it's been.
Update in the YouTube chat. Chris Guerrero wants everyone to know it's a 2-2 series in the NBA Finals.
Thanks, Chris. Good morning to you.
Coming in hot this morning.
Appreciate the updates. Yeah. So our opening segments are always, you know, as much as, you know, your consultants of the world hate it. I like a warm-up segment. You're supposed to hit the ground running, they say. Get to it.
Yeah, but if you haven't stretched...
Yeah, you can get injured.
Pull a muscle.
You can get injured. So, you gotta stretch out. And I
especially at this age, man.
And calisthenics apply to the brain as well. You know, they say the brain's your biggest muscle. I think that's actually...
Boy, am I screwed.
I think it's in your leg, but... Yeah, you gotta stretch out. So, I will tell you this. And one mistake... call it a mistake, is that I was brought up in radio with guys like, Don and Mike, Jim Cosmore, my idols, Howard Stern, Dan Le Batard's another guy I admire the heck out of, Dan Patrick. And one thing that they all have in common is they aren't entirely formulaic.
Mm-hmm.
The idea, the philosophy is that the more you share on the air, without going too far, you become a character, you become a member of the family. That's ultimately what radio is about. It's a very personal relationship with the listener. And the more you open up, the good, the bad, the indifferent, you know, probably the easier it is in your own mental health, but also you create, I've always wanted a real bond with the listener. Doing the time and temp and coming up next, and you know, I've always been very weak at the formulaic aspects of this job. The hit the teases, hit the greatest hits coming out. I mean, really, it's what you're supposed to do, especially in the world and how we're rated. You know, and I always get scared about talking about that because I don't know what the rules are there. You're basically never supposed to talk about how ratings work, so I don't even try.
Just know the bigger the number, the better.
Right.
I think you can say that and be safe.
Right. So a lot of what, you know, especially in our opening segment, a lot of what I do is this is never written out. It's never planned. More often than not, this first segment is thought of on the seat of the pants.
There's never anything filled in other than Carmichael Dave Show open.
Right. We have, I'm showing
the one thing that doesn't change on this rundown.
We have everything, you know, we have everything laid out. Not what we're going to say. You know, but, you know, we have what we're going to lead off with. We have in the 6:30, we're going to talk about the Open and Richard Sherman, and 6:45, the finals. At 7:30, anyways, this is the only one we don't. And I don't mind saying that I encountered something yesterday I've never encountered before in 20 years of doing this job. It was my first day back off vacation, which, by the way, I mentioned this a little bit yesterday. I will never do this again. I will never come back from a vacation unless it's like a day, unless mm-hmm. I'm missing a Monday. I'm never coming back from vacation in the middle of a week. It's just, it's too much of a whiplash. It's not natural. It's not good for anybody. And I was in a terrible headspace yesterday. Maybe the worst headspace. The worst headspace I've been in on air since the Monday I came on the air after the whole Grant Napier situation. It's the mm-hmm. worst head. And after a 10-day vacation, that's
supposed to be a recharge.
It's a recharge. But this vacation for me was a little bit different because I think the last year, everyone has struggled. And, you know, we always have to disclaim. And I think that's part of what my issue has been lately is I'm already anticipating what mean people are going to say, and it stifles what I'm saying. So I already am thinking in my head, well, of course somebody's going to say, you could get a real job. Oh, my God, you had a vacation. Oh, poor you.
There's people digging ditches right now.
Right, and I get that. I truly do. So the disclaimer, I love my job. I'm blessed to have it. I appreciate everything about it. I don't know what else I can say other than I'm constantly thankful of, not that I didn't work hard to get here, but of what we do, of the privilege. It really is a privilege. We use the term privilege in a lot of different ways. It really is a privilege to be able to do this. But the last year, I think for a lot of people, they can recognize this. And I went into this a little bit yesterday. The back and forth, the need to tear down, the stresses and all that. And so when I left for a extended period this time, it's the first time I've really had a chance to just pull away. And, man, I was so happy when I was gone. If you and I had gone on vacation together, you probably wouldn't have recognized me. I was just – I get up with a click in my step, whatever that means.
We'll run with it.
Was just happy and super happy-go-lucky, relaxed, pulse was down, blood pressure down, all that. And then coming back yesterday, I've never had this feeling before. Every time I come back from vacation, I'm like, I want to get back to it. Like, I'll check in all the time on the shows. I'll screw around. I can't wait to get back. I'll tweet 500,000 things. Not really this time. And so the one thing I want to address from yesterday, because I got a lot of blowback for it, was when I said, this might be my last, might be my last contract. This might be my last year. And should I have not said that. Let me be really clear. Hasn't everyone at some point reevaluated their lives, what they do, what they're doing, what they're going to do? I'm going to be 46 years old, August 11th. Thank you very much. Glad I made it that far. 46. And
not a lot of gray. I think you actually are doing much better than most men at that age when it comes to that.
Wow, that age. But you're right.
Not young.
You're right. And it isn't young. For a guy that started interning here at 16, that's a long time.
That's 30 years ago.
Gonna be 31. My dad, first day I ever worked here as an intern, was on Sepp's show and Carzar. And my dad dropped me off because I didn't have my driver's license yet. My dad would drop me off. He dropped me off in a 1960 something convertible Cadillac Seville. And Doug Brown of the Carzar was outside at the time, just happened to be. Ends up talking to my dad for 10 minutes because he loved the car. Car was pretty sweet. You might have seen it. Eddie Murphy drove it in the movie Metro.
Not your dad's car?
No, not this specific.
Oh. I'm saying, wow, that's not something I've ever heard.
So you reevaluate, and I'll wrap it by saying this. My wife's father passed of cancer 3 years ago, and her mother is down in Riverside. We can't get her to move up here. She's just
stubborn.
Yes.
Imagine.
Shocking.
Stubborn boomers. Who would have thought?
And the mom and the dad, her mom and dad had a ton of plans. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to retire at this age. Kids will be out of the house. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to whatever. My mom and dad, and I know my dad's listening right now, but he talks to me about this. They were going to go back to Guam and where they lived once. They're going to go to the Orient. They're going to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, stuff happens. My mother's had horrible health issues. My dad had a stroke 2 years ago. And the question then becomes, how do you bridge the daily responsibilities and life that you have and also the want to make sure that you don't stay too long to be able to experience the things you want to experience? Now, I'm not in a position where I can just go.
Sure.
But I also don't want to work at a job that I'm not passionate. If you're not passionate at this job, you can't fake it. You can't fake it. So coming back in the middle of the week and dealing with what I think the only way to describe this would be a tiny little midlife crisis. It's the only thing I can think of, and I've never had one, is to accept and acknowledge the feelings you're having, accept and acknowledge the lack of logic in some of them and what you want to do. Unless I want to go to Gold Beach, Oregon and work as a fishing guide when I don't even know how to, you know, tie an anchovy to it.
It's
not going to work.
Tom could teach you.
Tom could. I don't know why Tom's still here. Tom's 97 years old, still doing the morning show.
Yeah, he was shouting out like his sixth grade bus driver on a.
Right.
I'm like, dude, that guy's dead.
And I also think, and I say this with love and respect and affection, I think at some point covering a team for 15 years that has not made the playoffs, that you're incredibly tied to. It eventually, and seeing a team like the Suns do what they do, at some point you're just like, oh, God. So my hopes for this year are that this team finally does better, gets more fun, we get less formulaic, more conversational, and really understand that the grass is always greener, but that does not mean once you arrive at that lawn on the other side that it's still green. It could have been a mirage. I guess in short, what I'm trying to say is it's awesome to be here, and I did miss everybody, and I think I needed a day to kind of get set. Also, your facial hair is looking just fine.
Thank you. Yeah. I like to pick at it. It's a really bad habit.
Oh, bushy. Also, woke up at 2:30 this morning. Couldn't go back to sleep.
Woke up at 3:45. Wanted to go back to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. We'll take a break.
That was nice.
Coming up next.
All right. Let's lead her off because we got a lot of stuff going on. The Open, the British Open, as we call it here in America, is underway. And there's some familiar names, one in particular, the top of the leaderboard. Jay and I will pick our winners at some point, even though we have half a round in the books already. So we'll cheat. We have an even NBA Finals and a play of the decade.
Is it the greatest block of all time?
Of course, we'll argue about that. We have some really rough details about Richard Sherman that we talked about yesterday, including audio of a 911 call. Not a story we want to cover, a story that we need to cover. We'll get to all this. We'll lead off along with Sam Amick at 8:05 next.
It's time for Leading Off, brought to you by Lasher's Elk Grove Dodge, where for over 60 years, their name means a great deal in the Elk Grove Auto Mall and online at elkgrovedodge.com. Here's cut number one.
Comes around, Booker driving, lob to Ayton, knocked away by the Bucks. Giannis did it.
Well, it's sports radio, so of course we're going to have this conversation today. And to be honest, right after it happened, I asked.
Honest or Giannis?
Giannis. You know, on a scale of 1 to LeBron on Iguodala in the finals, where do you rank that block? And unfortunately, it's an impossible. First off, it's a silly question because why do we need to compare? But that's what we do. Secondly, it's going to depend on how this series turns out.
Yeah, well, that's the biggest element, right?
But I do wonder physically. I'd like to ask a lot of NBA players. In fact, I'd love to hear from Doug Christie on this, who played the game. This is one of those times where I don't think analysts and dum-dums like us really can answer the question. I need to hear from ball players physically, which was more impressive. LeBron running down Iguodala and not goaltending that block shot from behind, or Giannis recovering and then off of the one leg. By the way, he looked like he destroyed his knee like 20 minutes ago, it seems like, and now he's doing this.
That looks like, by the way, he did destroy his knee 20 minutes ago. He's just a freak.
That's why they call him the Greek freak. And for him to be able to do that and recover, I will say this. I don't know where the block ranks all time. I do know it's one of the great recoveries of all time.
Yeah,
this
for sure.
Situation. My God, what a block.
I have it. If you're saying rank it 1 to LeBron, I have it at LeBro.
Almost there.
Almost there. And I think the reason why it's LeBro and not LeBron,
right,
is LeBron's happened in Game 7.
Right.
And literally,
yeah,
you can pin it to an NBA championship.
Well, the difference in this game, everyone's going to point to the block, and I get it. The difference in this game to me is Devin Booker having 5 fouls. And by the way, he had 7 fouls, but Devin Booker having 5 fouls. And Devin Booker talk about a bounce back game. Devin Booker was unstoppable. 42 points. He got most of that in the first three quarters on 17-28. In my opinion, if Devin Booker has two or three fouls, the Suns win that ball game.
Probably.
But that's what didn't happen. Who cares? And Giannis with just 26, 14, and 8 with three steals.
Light work.
And two blocks.
What's crazy about the Booker thing, 42 points, he didn't make a three-pointer last night.
That's insane. 0-3 from behind the arc. We'll talk a lot more about that game, obviously, including Chris Middleton. The forgotten Robin to Giannis's Batman, really showing how good he is.
Forgotten Robin for, I think, the last 3 years.
I agree with you. All right, number two.
Leading off, cut number two.
With a score of 269, the winner of the gold medal and the champion golfer of the year is Shane Lowry.
Hello, Shane.
Yeah, Shane Lowry. Well done. That of course, was not this year.
Wasn't last year either.
Yeah, well, COVID's a thing, or was. Still is.
Yeah.
The Open is underway. It is fun for morning show hosts because we get up at such ungodly hours. It was really cool to wake up this morning and turn on
1 a.m., right?
Yeah, it just makes it tough because most people, you know, you want to watch golf in the midday afternoon and that ain't happening. A lot of rounds already in the books. As a matter of fact, there's quite a few people on the first and fourth holes and all that, but you've got some big names in the clubhouse or close to it. It's a major. So, of course, Louis Oosthuizen is there. Mm-hmm. He currently has a one-shot lead over Jordan Spieth, who fires a 65 to open. And he was one of the big favorites coming into this whole thing. Justin Rose through 14 minus 3. A lot of these names, they just show up at this tournament. You're almost always going to see a guy like Justin Rose, Louis Oosthuizen.
It's the most unpredictable of the four majors.
Correct. And look at Dustin Johnson, who's not been himself lately. 2 under through 14. Brooks Koepka finished 1 under today. And I'm scrolling because I know he started off rough. He had a bogey on the first. It didn't get much better for him. But, hey, that's where it stayed overall. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bogeys on the day. But 4 birdies for Bryson DeChambeau, who finishes 1 over. He is currently 7. I had to do math there off the pace.
It's never fun.
We'll have a lot of British Open stuff for you, including an update coming up here in about 10 minutes. Number three.
Leading off, cut number three.
Richard Sherman was arrested early this morning in Redmond, Washington. That is the police department that essentially arrested him and booked him. Bail was denied. Now, police in Redmond would not confirm the name of the person, but it matches up to where at 2 a.m. Pacific time, police received a 911 call from a residence. The person calling said that an adult male family member who did not live there was attempting to force his way into the home. Police arrived. Suspect was located outside the home, fought with police, but was eventually apprehended, was taken to a hospital to be checked, but was cleared, and then booked into the King County Correctional Facility.
That's Adam Schefter. I got to be honest with you, man. Of all the things we're doing on the show today, I've been thinking since last night yesterday afternoon when TMZ released the 911 call. I listened to the whole thing. I listened to multiple 911 calls.
Right.
I'm really struggling with how to cover this. We have the 911 call. We have it in our little sound folder right here. We'll play it. But isn't this kind of, I know you're not supposed to, again, formulaic. We're not supposed to have these conversations on the air. Isn't this kind of gross?
Yeah, I think so.
Isn't it kind of gross how this is being covered? Like, shouldn't it just be a man who's having a mental health issue, was arrested, who happens to be a star football player?
But isn't that the conversation we should have then?
I kind of think we should.
Okay.
You know, but this is going to be Richard Sherman's life and his mental state and his the wife and the kids and the uncle splayed all over the place because he can catch interceptions.
Yeah.
It's a little... It's unfortunately, Jay, I'm probably more interested in how the media and public receive and cover this story than I am the story itself. Other than, I really hope Richard, but beyond Richard, his family is okay.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because the more we hear about this, the less and less sympathy I may have for Richard. I don't know.
Yeah, I think here's where, and we can go into this in the next segment if you want, where I take issue with, you know, the idea of you have to have, it's like, I think people get sympathy and empathy confused.
Right.
And they're two completely different things.
Yes.
I don't know enough about the situation to have sympathy for Richard Sherman. However, right. I think it is important when it comes to not just Richard Sherman, but these situations in general, to really start practicing empathy. And I think that's something we really lack in society these days. And I think that's a big conversation we should have around this.
I like that you said there's a difference between sympathy and empathy, because I agree with you. And based on what details emerge out of this, that's going to rate where it is. But it shouldn't matter what I think or you think or what Niner fan thinks or Seattle fan thinks or whatever. This is a man with a family who's obviously having mental issues.
Yes.
And it's being broadcast everywhere because he can play football. It's kind of gross. But
society, get you some today.
But guess what? When we play this 911 call, people are going to be driving around. If they have to go inside, they're going to stay in their cars a little bit longer because they want to hear it. And then that makes our numbers go up and we can sell more sponsorships. So we'll do that later on. We'll take a break right now.
Yeah! That was nice.
Coming up next,
we'll get you a British Open update, as we will throughout the day. I want to remind you two Eagles tickets today. Well, one or two. Because I remember yesterday you said we have two pairs today.
We have two per today.
Major, major prizes. And we got trivia for you. Not Eagles. Well, technically Eagles trivia. We'll explain that a little bit later. And we also have some updates to Bradley Beal. And Trevor Bauer ain't going to be coming back to the Dodgers anytime soon, at least not for the next few days. We'll update you as to why. We'll do all that next.
1-800-920-1140 to talk.
Or maybe texting would be better.
Text the show at 916-339-1140. It's the Carmichael Dave Show on Sports 1140 KHTK.
Sports.
Sports.
It's all sports.
24 hours a day.
This works perfectly, too, by the way.
Oh, for the open? Dude.
Absolutely.
Look over. Who's coming up the hill?
Hey.
There's Rory. DMX underneath it.
When I think British Open, baby, I think the late, great DMX. Our British Open coverage is brought to you by Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always, always, always about quality.
So that's the liner. Do you prefer to call it the British Open or the Open? What is your take on that?
I call it the British Open because when I say the Open, I don't like to have to go, oh, wait, the U.S. or the British?
Right.
I just call it the British Open. But I understand from their point of view, they're like, no, dude, this is the original. We are the Open. Everything else is
here.
Right. And it's like, okay, it's whatever.
That's the thing. It sounds so presumptuous on their part to be like, no, this is the Open.
The Open.
The U.S. Open, it's like half open. We're the Open.
Right.
We're the French doors open, even though we're in England.
Yeah, the silly rebels in the U.S., those traitors, and they're dumb U.S. Open.
First they betray us, and then they have their own golf tournament? The nerve.
If Cornwallis only knew what he was doing, there'd only be one open.
Listen, if Cornwallis not bogeyed 16, we'd still be under English control. That's my take.
We should just I don't know if there's a golf course in Yorktown or not, but the U.S. Open should always be in Yorktown.
That would be hilarious.
Just to give the finger to Britain.
Any tournament, no matter the sport, if it is a U.S. Open, should be in Yorktown.
Tennis, same thing.
You got to rename Yorktown to Open Town.
Louis Oosthuizen is in at 6 unders. We just told you Jordan Spieth in the clubhouse with a 65. He is tied with Brian Harman. Couple of Americans there at 5 under. Dylan Fratelli along with Mackenzie Hughes and Stuart Sink. Again, Stuart Sink winning on tour this year. Hey, old people, while you know sometimes stubborn and annoying, are in fact useful, as Jim Carrey once said.
And also can golf sometimes.
Also very much can golf sometimes. All right. So I don't like the dumb radio bits where you just go through and spend an hour picking whoever's going to win the thing and then forget about it. But just real quick, let's just go quick snake draft order.
Okay.
Pick a number between 1 and 10.
7.
All right, I'll say 2. The number was 3. I'm just kidding. You go first. Just simply, give me really, let's pretend that we have a ton of money on this and we're betting against each other. So really do it. At the end of the day on Sunday, who's hoisting
three? All right, so I'm going to cheat with my first one and say Jordan Spieth just because he's sitting at -5 after round one.
All right, that's fine. And I will take the current leader, Louis Oosthuizen, because dang it, he is due.
Rory is my second choice.
Okay, that's a hell of a choice. And that makes
got there early to get a little practice in.
I'm going
to
take Justin Rose.
Okay, and then my third one is, and I'm going to do this from now on with majors, is I'm going to get an honorary old guy. And today's honorary old guy that could win it is Lee Westwood.
Lee, let me tell you something. I would like Lee Westwood to win it more than anyone.
Lee Westwood has a top three finish in every major. Yep, has never won one.
Dude, especially the Open. That would
be 48 years old. Like, let's do it.
I hope you're correct. My third pick, I'll take Dustin Johnson. So,
are you not doing an old guy pick?
Eh. Well, I mean, Louis Oosthuizen's kind of old, right?
How old is he?
He's so old that...
How old is Louis Oosthuizen?
He's 30, 40. Okay, real quick. I'll look this up and then we'll move on. Louis Oosthuizen, guess, how old is he?
42.
I'm going to say 38. All right, let me... Oosthuizen. Louis Oosthuizen, what did I say? Did I say 38?
Yes.
He's 38.
Nice.
He's 38.
Is that old? I turned 36 in October, jerk.
You know, it's not. Well, dude, I'm older than him.
Yeah, but we already established you're old. What's the line of demarcation for golf old? 40?
No. I think it's like 45.
Okay.
I mean, you're 50 on the Senior Open.
Right.
But do we consider Phil Mickelson old?
Yeah.
Wow.
Here's golf old. If you can play on the Senior Open, you're old. We'll go with that. And Mickelson can play on the Senior Open. He's 50.
Our amateur program director, my father, texted me at the beginning of the segment. Said, can we just go to the Eagles? Dad, Eagles giveaway will be in the 7:30 segment.
Yeah, call in and try to win. Make
sure. No, he can't.
Yeah, but I think it'd be great if he did.
I agree.
He can give away the tickets to somebody else, like caller 10. Actually, that's a bit. Eagles trivia with Carmichael Jack.
Today's we'll put these three picks for each of us up there. See who you think picked the better team, Jay or myself. Today's impossible to answer. Nobody wants to think about it, and they're just going to get mad at me for asking questions. Mm-hmm. Is already on Twitter right now. Which duo? And you've got to take age, contract, and everything into play here.
Okay.
Which duo do you think the Kings would be better off with if they made a Ben Simmons trade, short and long term? De'Aaron Fox and Ben Simmons, meaning Tyrese Halliburton was traded, or Tyrese Halliburton and Ben Simmons and De'Aaron Fox was traded? Right now, De'Aaron Fox and Ben Simmons, that's at 64%, but I think it's an incredibly interesting conversation.
Yeah, I think Fox, obviously, on the surface is the easy answer.
But I said
talent.
You have to take everything into account, and that's what people are missing.
Right, and when you start to do that, and that includes fit as well.
Fit, contract.
I think you might start to lean towards Tyrese if you get really deep into that conversation.
That's where I'm going to. This is not who's better, Fox or Halliburton.
No, that's not the...
That's not the question.
What's the better duo?
What's the better duo? And really, it's not so much what's the better duo. It's which duo gives the Kings the easiest path to success.
Right.
Tyrese is still on his rookie contract. He still has, you know, as De'Aaron keeps rising every year, but we kind of know what De'Aaron is.
So let me ask again if we're putting all of this together, right? Yeah. With De'Aaron and Simmons, we're assuming Ben Simmons isn't in the backcourt, right? With that, like Ben Simmons is playing the four.
I didn't go that deep.
When you go real deep into it, I think that matters.
But I'm assuming that either Fox or Halliburton would be playing the point. Now, does that mean Simmons is a two, a three, a four? I don't know.
Like if I had Fox at the one and Simmons on the four and three shooters, I might go with Fox. But if I don't have that and it's like, no, we're going to keep Simmons in the backcourt, I think the obvious answer is Tyrese.
I mean, just understand that If you have Simmons and Fox, you're looking at, what, 60-plus million combined between the two of them?
Sure, but if you got two stars, that's what you're going to pay.
Right. It's interesting.
It is interesting. Here's the other equation. I came up with a three-team trade yesterday that I think was really good that would actually have the Kings keeping both of those guys. Now, how would you feel about that them as a trio?
I would feel fine with it, but your trade is, I'm assuming, including three first-round picks.
Two. But it's a three-team trade, that's why.
Okay.
So let me pull
this up. The one with the Wizards?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You saw it. Okay.
I did.
I got to find Jay Mars on Twitter first.
Uh-huh.
That guy's always difficult. Uh-huh. All right, so here we go. The Kings receive Ben Simmons.
Uh-huh.
The Sixers receive Bradley Beal and Marvin Bagley.
Okay.
The Wizards receive George Hill, Buddy Hield, Matisse Thybulle, the Kings number 9, and a lightly protected 23 first rounder. I said I don't know if Washington does that specifically because of the whole Bradley Beal thing. Or could they get more for Bradley Beal? I don't know. But on the surface, I think the trade is fair. I think the Wizards would be the one to say no of those three teams.
So the Wizards would be getting George Hill, Buddy Hield, Matisse Thybulle, and two Kings first rounders.
You get two good first rounders because they're the Kings first rounders. Matisse Thybulle is your good young piece coming back. Buddy Hield you can use, obviously, and plug into your starting lineup immediately.
Well, first off, I don't know that the Sixers are trading Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle for Bradley Beal and Marvin Bagley.
I think they would. I think if Morey could land Bradley Beal to play with Joel Embiid, I think that would be a home run for him.
And Thybulle. Well, then the question also would become, why do the Wizards Sixers need the Kings, though? Because the Wizards don't want Simmons?
I think for the Wizards to pair Simmons and Westbrook would be ooey. Also, I personally think, and this is why I said I don't think the Wizards do the deal. I personally think the Wizards need to rebuild. They've needed to rebuild for probably the last four seasons, and they've just kind of treaded water towards that 8 seed. Yay. But I don't think, to your point, they want to rebuild. They want to keep like trying to retool and compete for the 8 seed. Retool, compete for the 8 seed. It's like, if that's the case, then I don't think they're going to trade Beal, period. And to your point, I think at that point they would trade Simmons straight up for Beal if that were the case.
Well, I think the big question here, too, is Bradley Beal is signed with a player option for another 2 years, you know, next year and the year after. The missing equation here is, does Bradley Beal want to stay in Washington? Is he going to try to force his way out?
Isn't that the strangest part? Because we've never really got a true indication that he wants to leave Washington despite all the issues there.
Yeah.
And the fact he's still on that roster just kind of goes to your point. Does he want to stay in D.C. long term? I can't imagine why, other than he must have a true love for that city. Because basketballically speaking, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
De'Aaron Fox, by the way, 28, 30, 32, and 34 million. Yeah, I get where you're going with it, the trade, and I don't hate it. I think the Kings would have to give up another first-round pick.
Would you? So for the Kings, it would be three first, Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley, essentially. I feel like for Simmons, that's pretty good.
I would.
I would, too.
I would do that.
Like, you're going to have to sacrifice something.
Yes.
Something major. You're going to have to be okay with taking a risk, and realistically, that risk involves draft picks.
And by the way, it doesn't mean, I know we got to go. I know it also doesn't mean you can't get first-round picks back ever.
Correct.
You can still make moves.
Mm-hmm. Fun times.
If only I could pick Monty McNair's brain. We'll take
if
a break.
Only.
If only.
Yeah! That was nice. Coming up next.
All right, don't want to leave this out. Just a couple of quick notes. Bradley Beal, speaking of, has entered COVID protocol. Mm. And Trevor Bauer's leave has been extended at least 2 weeks, resulting from the alleged domestic violence incident.
I would be surprised if we see Trevor Bauer back this year.
Interesting, as they continue to investigate there. When we get back, the NBA Finals, everybody knows about the block, but do you know who went to the hospital after the game?
Hey-o!
We'll talk about that next.
If you want a unique angle on a topic that no one in their right mind would think of, you're in the right place. The Carmichael Dave Show returns now.
Had an interesting conversation while watching last night's NBA Finals with the family, the wife and two children, and I was scrolling around and I saw this fact that blew me away, but it's very, very true. Jay, if you were given $10 for every year that the universe has existed, $10 for every year since the universe began, you would still have less money than Jeff Bezos.
Really?
Yes. And I even did the math.
Because that's a lot of years.
Yeah.
Earth's been around a while.
So I looked it up. The universe, they say, started about 1.7 billion years ago, which means you would have $170 billion. Jeff Bezos is over 200.
You know.
And by the way, I think that's after. I'm pretty sure that's after his divorce.
That's sad.
He's like at 220, 217 billion right now.
It's a lot.
Would probably be around 300 billion before the divorce.
What a loser gets divorced and that's only worth 217 billion.
I love what his ex-wife's doing, though. She's giving it all away.
Yeah.
Charity. Billions of dollars. She's like,
Bro, when I saw Jeff Bezos was going to space, I'm like, I hope he finds a planet, can like just chill there and just live his life out.
And that was not
you're not necessary.
That was not the most shocking part of that conversation, was the fact that if you had $10 for every year the universe existed, you would still have less money than Jeff Bezos. No. The weirdest part of that conversation was my wife goes, "Who's Jeff Bezos?"
No, she didn't.
That's the exact reaction I had, Jay, and I don't blame you one bit. I said, LOL, who's very funny.
Jeff Bezos?
And she goes, "Who's Jeff Bezos?" And I go, and my kids both look at her. And I go, wait, you're serious? She goes, "I don't know who that is. I thought Bill Gates was the richest guy, or that guy in Omaha, Warren."
Oh, yeah, the guy in Omaha.
I said, "Jeff Bezos was the CEO. He's the guy who started Amazon." And she goes, "Oh, yeah, I knew he was rich. I just didn't ever know his name."
"I knew he was rich. I just never knew his
name."
"So
what the hell are you?" She goes, her thing was, "I knew the owner of Amazon was rich. I just didn't know his name. I knew what he," she said, if you put a lineup of people and said, "Which one's the owner of Amazon, I could have picked his face out. I just never really caught his name."
Oh, okay. Does your wife not use any socials or anything like that? Like, does she stay off the internet?
I mean, she looks at Facebook and stuff, but no.
I mean, come on, his name would have had to pop up at some point on Facebook.
She's not on Twitter, I can tell you that, because I wouldn't be on Twitter anymore.
She's not on Twitter.
That's my safe space.
She on Instagram? Like, that name had to have popped up at some point.
You have to understand that my wife was basically raised in a barn in Eastern Riverside. That's what I've come to the conclusion.
Yeah.
I have this list of movies she still needs to see, which includes but is not limited to Armageddon, Tombstone, Natural Born Killers, Midnight Run, The Fugitive, Clear and Present Danger, Air Force One, Rain Man, True Romance, Saving Private Ryan, and any Bill and Ted.
She hasn't seen a Bill and Ted movie?
No, but she's seen every Pauly Shore and every Ernest movie.
That's
I married the person with the worst movie tastes in the world.
But isn't that kind of the whole opposites attract, yin yang?
No, because I don't have the best movie taste.
And you're supposed to help each other grow via movie.
How has anyone not seen True Romance or Tombstone?
Yeah, even I've seen those.
Right. I thought you were bad.
No. I'm not good, but I'm not that terrible.
You know he's good, Giannis.
Holiday against Payne. Down to Giannis. Wide open, slam it with a left hand.
He's so damn good. but the other guy is good, too. The other guy meaning Chris Middleton. Mm-hmm.
Mid-range two for the lead. Gone! Middleton! 101, 99 bucks. 90 seconds to go in the game.
Yeah, Chris Middleton had 40 points last night. Took 33 shots to get it. Let's point that out a little bit, too. But still, you got to put it in the basket. 46-4 with a couple of steals. 8 straight points down the stretch.
That's the big one.
Had to go to the hospital after the game.
Yeah.
Dehydrated.
Yeah, everyone, when I first heard Chris Middleton's on his way to the hospital, I'm like, oh, God, what did he hurt? Oh, he hurt his, I didn't drink enough water.
And listen, I get that it's, and I know you get to, it's not always as simple as drinking enough water.
Right, I know.
But I will say this, so he goes to the hospital, and the assumption here is that he got an IV at the hospital and was rehydrated, right? Isn't it kind of surprising they don't have that set up at his home venue?
And that's a brand new venue. You would think they would have top flight medical stuff.
It's a little surprised that he would have to go to the hospital to do that. Couldn't do it. Because what if that had happened at halftime?
You would know better than I would. Do the Kings have that type of setup? So, G1C?
I, I, I will say this because I don't know all the ins and outs. I've never walked.
You text Vivek,
but I'm 99.99% sure they do because that Kaiser Center is mm-hmm. on site. I'm pretty sure they can do just about everything.
Okay, cool.
There, I was a little shocked there. Anyways, down the stretch, lobbed to DeAndre Ayton. We've seen that so many times during the playoffs. Giannis, I wouldn't say caught out of position, just committed in a different direction. Sees the lob go over his head, makes one of the greatest defensive recoveries you'll ever see.
Comes around, Booker driving, lob to Ayton, knocked away by the Bucks. Giannis did it.
After the game, of course, the Bucks win 109-103.
Also, that call does not do that block justice.
It doesn't. It
Giannis took it away. He did more than that. He ended a guy's life.
I mean, he didn't dunk on him.
He took his soul.
He blocked a shot.
And took his soul in the process.
He was asked during the game, reporters had noticed in each of the last couple games, Giannis had subbed out and left the bench early in the first quarter. It's a very strange time to sub out, but also a really strange time. Maybe once. Maybe a shoe was bothering him. Who knows? But twice in the NBA Finals, he's not only subbed out, but left the bench early in the first quarter. Here's how that went.
To be honest, this was the second game in a row you went out early in the first quarter. I'm just curious what was going on there.
I wanted, what the hell you guys say it politely? I wanted to take a tinkle. A tinkle? Yeah, yeah. I went to take a tinkle. It came back. Yeah. That's it. That's polite, right? Tinkle is polite. Yeah. Both games. I went to take a tinkle. It went back.
Listen, I don't mean to go here, but I'm gonna go here. Yeah. Don't ever tell me a guy that doesn't have perfect English isn't freaking marketable.
Thank you.
That dude is the best.
Giannis Antetokounmpo. If you don't like him, is there something wrong with you?
You're an actual bad person. I'll go ahead and say it. You're a bad person if you don't like Giannis.
We're sitting right now, and it's tough to take this perspective because you're in it. But we're sitting right now, and I'm leaving things out. But just with Shohei Ohtani and Giannis Antetokounmpo alone. And by the way, leave aside the interpreter thing you just sure. brought up. That's not even where I'm going, but mm-hmm. oh, by the way, yes. Two of the great generational stories in sports history are unfold. Giannis, you know, if you haven't seen the documentary Finding Giannis, it's excellent. But as we said yesterday, Giannis and his brothers, his family, they're a Disney movie. Mm-hmm. Said that yesterday. What a wonderful, wonderful story. And then, you know, we've slobbered all over Shohei Ohtani and his story, and rightfully so. But the guy is just... He is, there's just no entitlement with him.
There's just a very genuine yes. nature to him, and he just very much is obviously grown and matured, but you can tell the fame of the NBA, the money has yeah, done nothing to him. He's still the guy that's like, oh my God, a corn dog. I love America. Like, it hasn't left, and it's actually really fun to watch.
Coming up at 8:05, Sam Amick's going to join us, and Giannis actually called Sam out by name earlier this week. I think it was on Sunday after the game because they had had a moment. I guess Giannis got locked out of his hotel room mm-hmm. and Sam was there doing whatever, staking people out. And they had a nice conversation for a while that Sam wasn't going to make public, but Giannis made it public. So we'll have Sam on at 8:05 to talk about that in the finals in general. We'll take a break right now.
Yeah! That was nice. Coming up next.
That audio only segment for our YouTube viewers.
Oh, geez. I just noticed that.
Well, they think we did it. That was a mistake.
No, it was on purpose.
Yeah, we wanted to give them a taste of what everyone else does. And, of course, right. you can watch us, YouTube.com/KHDK. We'll bring you back with the video next. Also, we'll get to Soundgarden, including what John Smoltz thinks Shohei Ohtani's best asset is. That's right after this.